Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Stafford.
It's the Red Palmer Show. It's the Red Palmer Show. What do you know? What do you say? It's the Red Palmer today. Are we on?
Yes, we're on.
Well, here's a story about a fellow named Red. About as silly as you can get. Ladies and gentlemen, Red Palmer.
Jim Stafford. Hey, it's great to meet you. I always thought of you growing up. I saw you on, of course, the Smother Brothers show. I got to interview those guys a few years ago. You had a blast in the show. I guess Wildweed, was that the name of the song?
And Wildwood Weed.
Wildwood Weed.
Wildwood Weed.
Cow Patty.
Yep. Yippee-yi-yay.
Spiders and Snakes.
That was the great big one.
I shook it at her. Said, this frog's for you.
You know me better than I know myself.
That's it. I loved you. I loved your music, and you were always kind of like, I hope it's not offensive, but the intellectual country guy. You know, the only one I could connect you to would be who wrote Trailers for Sale or Rent.
Roger.
Yeah,
Roger
did you get to be friends?
Yes, I knew Roger Miller.
I can see you two teaming up.
Yeah, and he's a very interesting man. We were at a party one time, and he says, I'm working on a song because I think couples sometimes act like chickens. And I said, how's that work? He went, couple. So he made the word couple start sounding like a chicken.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I also heard him say one time that I don't get out of bed till I can think of something.
Oh, yeah?
That's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Don't get out of bed till you can think of something.
Now, your mind's always going, still. I mean, even
pretty
like the little...
Pretty much gone by now, but yes. Going.
Even with the little shtick about the song for me. So, the life of Jim Stafford. First of all, you're a Florida boy. You know, there's a lot of talented people in the world. There's a big pool of talent. Right. How did you emerge from... you know, a local boy playing his guitar.
Yeah,
obviously had a great talent.
Well, I have to tell you something, Red. The truth of it is, Winter Haven, as you know, that's Cypress Gardens. That's where that was all those years. Now it's Legoland, but it was Cypress Gardens.
Legoland.
Yes.
My grandma used to take me to that place when I was a kid.
It takes forever to build a skier these days. It was one of those things. Expected to hold together behind a boat.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. And so anyhow.
Legoland.
Believe it or not, it is a small area. But believe it or not, quite a few people came out of that area that had some national success. Well, I was in a band with two others that known very well nationally. The one of them is a fellow named Kent Lavoie, who recorded under the name of Lobo, Me and You and a Dog Named Boo.
Oh, you and me and a dog named Blue Boo.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And the other guy is Graham Parsons.
Yeah,
and Graham. And Graham is listed in the 100 most influential people in the history of rock and roll.
Really?
Yeah, he's the guy that recorded Sweethearts of the Rodeo with the Byrds. He was in the Byrds when he recorded that.
Roger McGuinn.
And that is where country rock, not hillbilly, not rockabilly, but country rock came from. That's where Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, when they heard Sweethearts of the Rodeo, and the Eagles and all those groups that sounded kind of like country rock guys, that was Graham's idea.
Yeah, and what did he produce other people? Did he sing? Was he in the Crosby, Stills, and Nash for a while? Or
no, he was. He
what
was.
Am I thinking of?
He
Traffic.
Was in the International Submarine Band. He was in the Byrds, and
just think if we hadn't had Roger McGuinn in the Byrds, we may not have Bob Dylan today. They're the ones that really made the Bob Dylan songs with that 12 stringer and that style he had.
Yeah, that whole sound, and they had good luck with what was the one that Bob Dylan wrote that was such a big hit for them?
Hey, Mr. Tambourine
Man. Yeah.
Play a song for me.
And then Pete Seeger wrote that other one, Turn, Turn, Turn.
Yeah. Did you get to know Pete?
No. I saw him at a ski lodge one time, but I
saw him at a gas station. We met him. That's a true story.
Down from the ski lodge.
In New Paltz, New York. Yeah, he was getting gas. And I, of course, as a boy and growing up in Poughkeepsie, New York, he would come up on his sloop and always was, he was ecologically sound long before any of us got on board, literally and figuratively, you know?
Yeah.
He's a great guy. You know, Arlo is a four friendly. I don't know if I could say I'm a friend. I mean, but, we communicate back and forth and we text and stuff. And of course, he was with Pete, you know, when, the day that we lost him, they were in communication.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was, well, of course, Pete used to hang out with his father, Woody Guthrie.
Right. Well, I really like Arlo.
He lives right up the street here, by the way.
Right. He came to my show. I had a theater, you know, I had my own theater in Branson, Missouri for 20 years.
20 years?
A little over 20 years, yeah. And he came by.
So this means you're mega rich.
Beg pardon?
Mega rich. You must be very extremely wealthy.
Well,
I'm figuring,
I have
1,000 seats a day.
I have my own guitar.
My own guitar. 20 years, though. And so you obviously didn't do it for money. You did it out of love.
Well, the truth is that...
That's what we want. We want the truth.
Yeah, you know, when you get to have a place, and every day that you go into that place, you don't have to have a sound check. You don't have to have a light rehearsal. You don't have to do anything. It's just all there. So
you don't have to worry about coming into town and say, well, we got one plug in the sound system. Is that enough?
Yeah. Oh, I actually had a guy say, well, there's your spotlight over there. You didn't say nothing about a spotlight operator. And that's when a waiter learned how to operate a spot. That was the night that happened.
We have this, Jim, should you need it. You know?
So it's all happened. But because you get to play in a situation like that, I wound up with stuff coming up from the floor, things coming down from the ceiling. I had blimps the size of a car that free-floated over my audience. I created my own rear screen projected 3D presentations where things would float around out, you know, and come out at the audience and all that. So I got to do a lot of things.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
I'm standing in front of a 8 chicken dancers singing, let's all go to Branson Moe where all the stars put on a show and sing their hits. Ba-ba-da-ba-dum. Putting on the grits.
And so, putting on the grits.
Yeah, so we
good.
Did all that stuff, you know. So I did a lot of crazy things.
Shucks,
and had a lot of fun.
I wish I'd gone. I went to Branson once, and it was so crowded. I turned around and left. I swear to God, I didn't get out of the car. I don't like crowds.
125 shows in a town of about 5,000 or 6,000 people.
Amazing.
Crazy. It was crazy.
Stuck
but you
in
know,
the Ozarks.
Enough's enough. I really enjoyed it. I wouldn't take anything for a moment that I had there. I loved it, and. But, you know.
Well, humor is easy to sell to. People want somebody like you uplifting. Give me some levity of life. Even today, look at this new song that's making it, this happy song. People want what you were giving them years ago. The cycles come around again, you know?
Well, you know, I really like where things are now. I feel like that, you know, the guy with the cigar at the desk that you got to get by to get anywhere in show business is missing now. And a fellow with the people are becoming successful with videos they made on their iPhone.
Yeah. So everybody has a chance.
Yeah, the little guy's the big guy now if he is creative.
True guy, the true artist can emerge without, when I was almost signed to Liberty Records, this guy, what was his name? Herky. I'll never forget Herky. I like to punch him in the chin when I meet him. Because he said, this is 23 years ago. I was almost signed to Liberty Records. He goes, cowboy hats are on their way out. Cowboy hats are on their way out.
Right, right.
I don't think so.
And you had to get past people like that or you didn't get anywhere. But my friend did this for the fellow I was telling you about. I was in Clearwater, Florida.
Yeah.
And I had written a little talking song. And so he comes by. I play it for him. And he liked it. We recorded it. Sold 500,000 copies.
What was it?
And got into the top 40.
Wow.
The first record.
Wow.
It got to 39. That counts.
It does.
Blackwater Hattie lived back in a swamp where strange green reptiles crawled, and the snakes hang thick from the cypress trees like sausage on a smokehouse wall. For the swamp is alive with 1,000 eyes, and all of them watching you. Stay off of the track of Hattie's shack in the back of the black bayou.
Excellent stuff, man.
And,
are you going to do? Okay, let's go back to Florida because I kind of interrupted you. This is this little pool of talent. It's kind of like Muscle Shoals. Why did all that talent come out of Muscle Shoals?
Well, that's three of us in Winter Haven.
Yeah,
and then there's a town that bumps up against us. It's about 3 miles from my house, and Bobby Braddock lived there.
Why do I know that name?
Because he's had so many hit records. He's the guy that He's the guy that wrote "He Stopped Loving Her Today."
Oh my word!
He taught us, thanks to Tammy Wynette, he taught us all how to spell divorce.
Yeah, really.
Remember that song?
Yeah, sure.
D-I-V-O-R-C-E. Yeah. So he had a bunch.
I'm not a good speller.
And you know, not only did he have those songs a long time ago, but here a while back.
Wow, a
year or so ago, there was a song.
He stopped loving her today.
Yeah.
Can you do it? Listen, that song, you know, they say that George didn't want to sing it?
That song was a huge project.
He thought it was depressing and said, I'm not going to sing that song.
It took over a year to cut that song.
A year?
Yeah. George did it just almost like line by line. And he was drinking during that period of his time and was a little reluctant about the whole deal, didn't quite see it. And they were writing it and rewriting it and writing it and rewriting it forever, too.
I met Peanut Montgomery, the guy who wrote the B-side.
Oh, you did?
I'm kind of a B-side guy. Yeah, Peanut Montgomery. He wrote about 73 of George's songs. He lives up in Muscle Shoals now.
I got a cut on George Jones.
Did you? Which song was that?
Let's see if it's on here.
See if it's on here.
On a highway deep within the heart of Texas, I'm just about as lost as I could be. Driving round in circles, trying to find a border. Texas was as far as I could see. I finally flagged me down a state policeman. I said, my patience is growing mighty thin. Can you help me get the hell out of Texas? He just flashed me some old Long Star kind of grin. He said, you can't get the hell out of Texas, and so forth. As it turns out, it goes Dallas, Lubbock, and Fort Worth, Lubbock and Fort Worth. You can't get the hell out of Texas. It is the hell-raising center of the earth, and so forth. But George cut the fire out of that. Oh, it's beautiful.
You're just as sharp as you were when you were like 20. When did you first emerge? So you got a couple of songs, like he sang that, and so that.
Well, my buddy liked that I played in teenage bands with. He liked that Swamp Witch song, and that was that.
And that became a hit.
Yeah, and then then a guy shows up on my. I was staying at the 40 Winks Motel.
40 Winks Motel.
Yes, in Venice, Florida.
Oh, Venice. I like Venice.
Yep. And a guy shows up, knocks on the door, and he brings a song, and it goes like this. It brings the song to me. It goes, I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. Come on, love me. Almost like a Beatle. Love me. Come on, love me. Like that.
And, now, that was your version, or he started?
That was the one he played for me.
Okay.
And I took it home and worked on it for 3 months. I'm not that good, but I am that slow. I took a long time to work on this thing.
So you stole it.
I added this. Added the riff. And I gave it a different kind of beat. I gave it a beat. And then I concluded the choruses. Instead of saying, come on, love me, I said, supposedly what it takes to love me. Fooey foo. I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me. Like I wanna be loved by you. So I had to fool with it. But I got it like I wanted it, and I was very fortunate with that song.
Yeah.
It sold 2.5 million copies and never made it to number one.
You're kidding.
Because of two songs. One, I understand. The other one, I'm upset about.
Okay. What's the one that you
The one that I understand is The Way We Were by Barbara Streisand.
Sure.
A brilliant,
Marvin song. Marvin Omelet. I met him in a deli in New York, Marvin Omelet. Yeah. Marvin Hamlisher.
I thought you said the Amish there for a minute. Okay.
Omelet.
Yes, you're right. And the other one, which I don't have the patience with that I should, was We Had Joy, We Had Fun, We Had Seasons in the Sun.
Oh, my word.
Anyhow, but that was a gigantic record.
Oh, yeah.
Seasons in the Sun was huge.
No, your song was Spiders and Snakes.
I was happy that it did as well as it did.
Now, I'd like to know, what did your father do before you? Because you're always, I thought this way, so I really would like to ask you this, is that you're kind of you're an intellectual guy. and you're really gifted with a guitar. So sometimes there's real craftsmen in Nashville, and they're the players. And you're sort of like a combination of a performer. You have the ego, the drive. You also have the you're a poet, and you know the whole combination is a rare combination. So what did your dad do?
My dad was in the dry cleaning business, really? But he was a frustrated picker. He liked to play it. He did the old Jimmy Rogers tunes, you know. Remember Jimmy Rogers?
Sure.
The blue yodeler. Let's see. She's long, she's long, she's tall. She's 6 feet from the ground. Loud, loud, that kind of thing. She's long, she's tall. She's 6 feet from the ground. Like that. So he did those kinds of things. It's very simple songs. And always kind of wanted to be a performer and all that, but kind of a shy fella. And what happened was the guitar was always kind of laying around, and a friend of mine's brother came back from Germany had a guitar with him, and so he started learning to play. He was lived right across the street from it. I started learning to play and got the bug. And I mean to tell you, got it bad. And to this day, I still, if I'm near a Walmart, I'll go look at the guitar magazines. I can't help it.
Yeah.
Now, my first TV appearance was before my records. I was on the Ted Mack Amateur Hour.
Were you really?
Yes, I was. And that's
not many people can remember that.
Oh,
I remember that.
Oh, my gosh. And it was Major Bowes on the radio before that. But it was kind of like the Star Search of the
Or the American Idol of today. Yeah,
yeah.
The beginnings.
And so, anyhow, I'll play a little bit of what I played on there. Just a little bit. Okay, this is Yankee Doodle. I'll try to do this. This is Dixie. Let's see if I can get it. So that's Yankee Doodle and Dixie. And now here's Yankee Doodle and Dixie. Sloppy. That's both of them at the same time. So anyhow,
if people only knew, I can see the licks he's doing here, and as a musician.
Well, now, so anyhow,
I can't even call myself a musician in the shadow of you, but
that's a little bit of a gimmicky kind of thing. See,
and were you the kind of kid that needed attention?
That was Chet Atkins' idea to do that.
Oh, really?
And so I just learned what he did. See, and he was watching that night, but I was a kid down there in Winter Haven. You know, I didn't know. He was a hero of mine. Chet Atkins was. So later, after I had the records and all, you know, we became real good friends, and we had lots of fun. You know, Chet Atkins was just a very special fella. Anyhow.
How was he special? Reflect on Chet Atkins.
Well, he helped a lot of people out. He took care of people. He young writers and guitar players, he would give them his time when he didn't have to and all of that. And he was just a good man.
Do you find most of the people at the top are the nice people? I find that to be true.
Yeah, I think so.
He
said, you didn't give me any credit when you did that song. And I said, well, it wasn't about you, was it? So, but he was funny. And I told him one time, I said, Chet, sometimes it's hard to, because, you know, if you're a guitar player and you're just trying to shoot the breeze with Chet Atkins, you have to really concentrate on the friend side of yourself and not the fan side, or otherwise you're drooling, you know.
Yeah, you're fawning all over the guy.
And that's what he said. He said, I do that with people that I admire greatly. And he told me a story. Yeah, I'll tell you this real quick. There's a great guitar player named Johnny Smith. He's passed away not too long ago. Great guitar player. And he wrote Walk, Don't Run. And then you remember
play a little
remember
for the people, man.
Yeah.
It was on the turntable every morning before we went to school.
Yeah. So anyhow, that's Walk, Don't Run. It was great little piece. So now Johnny Smith writes it.
Yeah.
Chet Atkins likes it, and so he, made this wonderful arrangement of it. And was so excited, he flew all the way to New York City to play it for Johnny Smith. And Johnny was playing a job someplace, and Chet hunted him up and said, I learned your song. I want you to hear it. Because he did have a beautiful arrangement of it. And I said, well, how did Johnny like it? He said, he corrected me. So, but here's the kicker. Later, these guys that were, I forget their names. One of them's name is Snooky, but the guys from The Ventures, that's the ones that they cut Walk Don't Run.
Yeah.
So they listened to Chet Atkins'
classic
and cut a simpler rock and roll version of what he had done.
Yeah.
And it was a big hit. And as it turns out, Johnny Smith, who corrected Chet Atkins on this thing, also put his kids through college with that song.
Yeah. So is that true? So you hear the talk on the street. Is that true? Like, I was backstage at Opryland once when I interviewed Garth, and I was talking to some president of a record company. He told me the guy that wrote, like, I got friends in low places where the whiskey flows and beer chases the blues away. Big classic hit from for Garth.
That wasn't bad, by the way, what you just did. That wasn't bad.
All right. Now, I wish I wrote it. He told me that that guy made $4 million the first year and didn't have to step out of his double wide at all to make a living. Is that truth? Is there that kind of money, or was there, you know?
There was a rock hit on Walk Softly on This Heart of Mine that Bill Monroe wrote, and he pulled the check out of his pocket and showed it to his band members and said, look here, I done made it a $1,500 on this thing. And his band member, one of his guys said, that's $150,000. You've got a few more zeros to read.
I bet you that's an absolutely true story.
That is a true story, yeah. The guy told me. I did a
show
with him. Yeah,
but I wrote a song for Mrs. Miracle, which is a Hallmark movie, 4 years ago. But it says, have a very Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. But it says, moms, dads, girls, and boys in church choir singing song, celebrating Christmas Day. Jesus Christ is born. Jesus Christ is born. Have a very Merry Christmas, a very Merry Christmas. They said, well, we're going to use it. We got it on there for 80 seconds. I'm waiting there. I said, oh, boy, 37 million people are going to see this. I can die now, Jesus. I have declared it. And it comes on. And my sweetheart's next to me, and I said, there it is. She said, what are you talking about? I said, they're walking through the mall, and the lady from Hallmark said, Hallmark is not about Jesus. It's about Christmas cards and Santa Claus.
And your thing's playing in the background?
They turned it way down.
Way down.
So I waited 4 years. I finally got a check. My first check from ASCAP last November was for $254. I decided, my first ASCAP check, I gave it away to a church. I said, I'm not even going to cash it.
So, but I mean, you know, that's the way it works. I didn't do too well with the songs that I did, even the ones that I wrote, because when you're a kid and you have records like this, you know, you're so excited about your
you would have done what you did for free,
and you also don't have a lot of ground to stand, and a lot, you can't make a lot of demands. You're just so excited to be cutting a record, you can hardly believe it, you know.
Did you? I mean, I remember when I used to play little clubs. At the end of the night, they'd come up and give me a check. I said, "Oh, I get paid for this." Did you feel the same way?
When I was working in Atlanta, Georgia, and kind of learning my craft, I worked for a guy named Bill Bentley, who said, "Something's wrong with the bank. Are you okay with your checks and everything? I'm not seeing what I should be seeing." He said, "Go home and look around." And I found six checks in a sock drawer. Six checks in a sock drawer. I've never been in this for the money. I'm not interested in the money. I think that people that are serious about it don't think much about it.
Yeah.
You know, they if the money's there, that's great.
But when I look at you, and I always thought this about you, now meeting you face to face, I can see, I mean, you're a really bright guy. You could have been like a surgeon. You could have been a doctor. You could have been anything you wanted to be.
Well, I'm pretty happy with what I do. And you're right. As far as the guitar goes, I feel like I'm kind of an explorer, and I'll take songs and try to, you know, make something out of them, or try to change them, try to fix them, try to make them better if I can.
I got a few that need some fixing.
I'll give you an example. I always admired piano players, like especially when they play the boogie woogie, because they got the right hand going with the bass and the left hand going with all the other stuff. And with a guitar, it takes two hands to make one sound, which is different. So to try and fight that, see. Maybe it's the Yankee Doodle Dixie in me, but here's what I'm working on these days. See if you like this. Like that.
You have amazing dexterity, too.
Thank you.
You obviously love it. You're still doing it.
Yeah, just came up with that one.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. This is Rhett Palmer. We're talking with Jim Stafford, spiders and snakes and cow patty, and some surprises coming up when we return. Who loves you, baby?